This is the Cambridge Assessment International Education, Cambridge IGCSE, March 2023 examination in English as a second language. Paper 4. Listening. Welcome to the exam. In a moment, your teacher is going to give out the question papers. When you get your paper, fill in your name, centre number and candidate number on the front page. Do not talk to anyone during the exam. If you would like the recording to be louder or quieter, tell your teacher now. The recording will not be stopped while you are doing the exam. Teacher, please give out the question papers. And when all the candidates are ready to start the test, please turn the recording back on. Now you're all ready. Here is the exam. Exercise 1. You will hear 4 short recordings. Answer each question on the line provided. Write no more than 3 words or a number for each answer. You will hear each recording twice. Question 1. A. What did Sally forget to take on the trip? B. What souvenir did Sally bring back from the trip?
How was your trip to the coast, Sally?
Not bad, but it was quite chilly and I only realised that I'd left my warm jacket at home when we arrived at the beach. I was shivering in my T-shirt, but still had lots of fun.
And did you buy that picture frame with seashells you wanted to get at the seaside?
I looked at one, but in the end decided to go for a necklace. It's going to look nice with my favourite earrings.
How was your trip to the coast, Sally?
Not bad, but it was quite chilly and I only realised that I'd left my warm jacket at home when we arrived at the beach. I was shivering in my T-shirt, but still had lots of fun.
And did you buy that picture frame with seashells you wanted to get at the seaside?
I looked at one, but in the end decided to go for a necklace. It's going to look nice with my favourite earrings.
Question 2. A. What day was Ben's interview? B. What did Ben like least about the job offer?
Hi, Ben. How did your interview go on Wednesday?
Quite well, but it didn't take place till Friday, as one of the interviewers was off sick. In fact, it went so well that they offered me the role the following Monday.
Congratulations! Are you going to take it?
Well, they offered me some training and the location is all right, but the salary was lower than I'd hoped for, so I've pretty much decided I'm going to turn it down and just see what else is out there.
Hi, Ben. How did your interview go on Wednesday?
Quite well, but it didn't take place till Friday, as one of the interviewers was off sick. In fact, it went so well that they offered me the role the following Monday.
Congratulations! Are you going to take it?
Well, they offered me some training and the location is all right, but the salary was lower than I'd hoped for, so I've pretty much decided I'm going to turn it down and just see what else is out there.
Question 3. A. What is the new closing time at the gym? B. Which activity does the speaker recommend to get fit quickly?
You might have heard that our community gym is opening again next month. As many of you complained that you struggled to get there before the closing time of 6 p.m, it will now remain open until 8 p.m. 7 days a week. We've also introduced a variety of new classes, including yoga and modern dance. But if you want to improve your fitness levels over a short period of time, try cycling. It's even better for your fitness than swimming, and much more fun. You might have heard that our community gym is opening again next month. As many of you complained that you struggled to get there before the closing time of 6 p.m, it will now remain open until 8 p.m, 7 days a week. We've also introduced a variety of new classes, including yoga and modern dance. But if you want to improve your fitness levels over a short period of time, try cycling. It's even better for your fitness than swimming, and much more fun.
Question 4. A. Where did Eve buy the book? B. How much did Eve spend on the book?
Hi, Eve. How's your search going for that old book? Have you checked the website I recommended last week?
I did, but it had sold out there. But you'll never believe it. Last week, I was waiting for my dad to finish work, and there's this second-hand shop near his office. I went in just to pass some time and found it there. It was a real bargain, too.
Wow.
The price tag said £6, but it was reduced to £2.50. I had £7.50 left, so I had a milkshake on the way home.
Hi, Eve. How's your search going for that old book? Have you checked the website I recommended last week?
I did, but it had sold out there. But you'll never believe it. Last week, I was waiting for my dad to finish work, and there's this second-hand shop near his office. I went in just to pass some time and found it there. It was a real bargain, too.
Wow.
The price tag said £6, but it was reduced to £2.50. I had £7.50 left, so I had a milkshake on the way home.
That is the end of the 4 short recordings. In a moment, you will hear exercise 2. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Exercise 2. You will hear Robert Williams, who is a national park ranger, talking about grizzly bears and how to stay safe in bear territory. Listen to the talk and complete the details below. Write 1 or 2 words or a number in each gap. You will hear the talk twice.
Hello everyone and welcome to the talk. Grizzly bears are considered to be a threatened species in many parts of the United States. Those that are found in the wild, for example in national parks, live on average for 24 years. However, the oldest grizzly bear in one of our parks reached the age of 39 years. This is very impressive considering that other species of bears, like polar bears, rarely live beyond 30 years. Grizzly bears are intelligent animals with highly developed senses. They're believed to see in color and can see well from a short distance, but recent research shows that their long-distance eyesight isn't very good. Their hearing is twice as sensitive as humans, but their strongest sense is that of smell. They can locate food from far away. Now, let's talk about other things that grizzly bears can do. When they want to, they can move fast and reach speeds as high as 50 kilometers per hour. When running on flat land. What I hadn't expected when I started learning about these animals is how good they are at swimming, especially considering their size. And some people can't believe how quick young bears are when it comes to climbing trees. Now, what about their eating habits? Bears have a varied diet, and they actually spend most of their time feeding, particularly in autumn, when they need to gain as much body fat as possible in preparation for their winter sleep, known as hibernation. The length of their sleep varies, but Most bears are awake by the middle of spring when food is easily available again. Grizzly bears can be dangerous to humans, so there's a few things that you need to remember in order to stay safe. Firstly, look for evidence that bears may be close by. In my experience, turned over rocks are clear proof of where a bear has been looking for food. I'm often asked about broken branches, but any kind of animal, including grizzly bears, can cause this kind of damage. It's useful to remember that most grizzly bears will avoid humans if they see them coming. So, if you think you've spotted one, make extra noise to help it notice you. For example, by clapping your hands. Another good idea is to wave your arms, as this will help the bear realize that you are human and it will most likely leave. But what if the bear is not leaving? Don't be tempted to move away quickly, as the bear is much faster. Instead, watch how it behaves to assess how dangerous the situation is. The bear might stand on its back legs. This behavior suggests that the bear is curious rather than threatening, so try to stay calm, as there's a good chance that it'll still walk away. To find out more about grizzly bears, please visit our website. Though, if you're already in the park, it's the information boards that contain the most recent updates on bears in the area, so don't forget to read them. You can also pick up a leaflet with interesting facts about other animals in the park from our visitor centers. Now, does anyone have any questions?
Now you will hear the talk again.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the talk. Grizzly bears are considered to be a threatened species in many parts of the United States. Those that are found in the wild, for example in national parks, live on average for 24 years. However, the oldest grizzly bear in one of our parks reached the age of 39 years. This is very impressive considering that other species of bears, like polar bears, rarely live beyond 30 years. Grizzly bears are intelligent animals with highly developed senses. They're believed to see in color and can see well from a short distance, but recent research shows that their long-distance eyesight isn't very good. Their hearing is twice as sensitive as humans, but their strongest sense is that of smell. They can locate food from far away. Now, let's talk about other things that grizzly bears can do. When they want to, they can move fast and reach speeds as high as 50 kilometers per hour when running on flat land. What I hadn't expected when I started learning about these animals is how good they are at swimming, especially considering their size. And some people can't believe how quick young bears are when it comes to climbing trees. Now, what about their eating habits? Bears have a varied diet, and they actually spend most of their time feeding, particularly in autumn, when they need to gain as much body fat as possible in preparation for their winter sleep, known as hibernation. The length of their sleep varies, but most bears are awake by the middle of spring when food is easily available again. Grizzly bears can be dangerous to humans, so there's a few things that you need to remember in order to stay safe. Firstly, look for evidence that bears may be close by. In my experience, turned over rocks are clear proof of where a bear has been looking for food. I'm often asked about broken branches, but any kind of animal, including grizzly bears, can cause this kind of damage. It's useful to remember that most grizzly bears will avoid humans if they see them coming. So, if you think you've spotted one, make extra noise to help it notice you. For example, by clapping your hands. Another good idea is to wave your arms, as this will help the bear realize that you are human and it will most likely leave. But what if the bear is not leaving? Don't be tempted to move away quickly, as the bear is much faster. Instead, watch how it behaves to assess how dangerous the situation is. The bear might stand on its back legs. This behavior suggests that the bear is curious rather than threatening, so try to stay calm, as there's a good chance that it'll still walk away. To find out more about grizzly bears, please visit our website. Though, if you're already in the park, it's the information boards that contain the most recent updates on bears in the area, so don't forget to read them. You can also pick up a leaflet with interesting facts about other animals in the park from our visitor centers. Now, does anyone have any questions?
That is the end of the talk. In a moment, you will hear exercise 3. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Exercise 3. You will hear 6 people talking about the places they grew up in. For each of speakers 1 to 6, choose from the list, A to G, which opinion each speaker expresses. Write the letter in the appropriate box. Use each letter only once. There is one extra letter which you do not need to use. You will hear the recordings twice. Speaker 1.
I spent my whole childhood in a picturesque town surrounded by gentle hills. I always wondered why it never became a tourist destination, as it had everything that people enjoy: interesting architecture and lots of walking trails on the outskirts, and even a lake nearby. Me and my friends spent all our free time there, swimming and fishing, or sometimes we'd go to the local cinema. I've had to move away to go to university, but I'd be quite keen to go back one day and raise my children there.
Speaker 2.
I was brought up in a small village 20 minutes away from a coastal resort full of tourists. My main memory is of me and my friends just hanging out together on the main street, watching the cars passing by. Nobody ever stopped unless they lived there. The place had literally just a single shop and a post office. You couldn't even walk in the fields as the farmer would chase you away. And as nothing's changed since I left, I wouldn't move back there if you paid me to.
Speaker 3.
My whole family still live in the same small town where I was brought up, and nothing much has changed. But having experienced life in a big city as a university student, I'm happy to stay where I am, despite the significantly higher living costs. Admittedly, many of my friends did go back. They say that city life is not something they could get used to. But why would anyone want to live in a place that seems to be stuck in the past?
Speaker 4.
I have some fond memories of my hometown, even though it was quite a poor place at the time. After a major employer in the area closed, a lot of people had to relocate for work, and many local businesses didn't survive. But the community spirit kept us going through the challenging times. Thanks to some recent investments, the main street is once again full of cafes, shops, and restaurants. And that's why lots of people choose to retire there.
Speaker 5.
I grew up in a rather average town, a nice enough centre with a few cafes, a number of decent primary schools, and fairly affordable property prices. Also, you never needed to worry about being unemployed, as a local factory was always looking to take people on. They still do to this day. In fact, that's the key reason why many people chose to live there. I decided to move away to go to university, but have no plans to move back there, now that I've graduated.
Speaker 6.
My hometown has everything you could wish for. You know, green spaces, some good schools, a variety of shops. I'm quite lucky that I can live with my parents, as the property prices are way above what an average person can afford. To be fair though, unless you live here or are visiting family or friends, there's no real reason to visit. It's just one of many similar towns in this part of the country, with nothing of particular interest.
Now you will hear the six speakers again. Speaker 1.
I spent my whole childhood in a picturesque town surrounded by gentle hills. I always wondered why it never became a tourist destination, as it had everything that people enjoy: interesting architecture and lots of walking trails on the outskirts, and even a lake nearby. Me and my friends spent all our free time there, swimming and fishing, or sometimes we'd go to the local cinema. I've had to move away to go to university, but I'd be quite keen to go back one day and raise my children there.
Speaker 2.
I was brought up in a small village, 20 minutes away from a coastal resort full of tourists. My main memory is of me and my friends just hanging out together on the main street, watching the cars passing by. Nobody ever stopped unless they lived there. The place had literally just a single shop and a post office. You couldn't even walk in the fields, as the farmer would chase you away. And as nothing's changed since I left, I wouldn't move back there if you paid me to.
Speaker 3.
My whole family still live in the same small town where I was brought up, and nothing much has changed. But having experienced life in a big city as a university student, I'm happy to stay where I am, despite the significantly higher living costs. Admittedly, many of my friends did go back. They say that city life is not something they could get used to. But why would anyone want to live in a place that seems to be stuck in the past?
Speaker 4.
I have some fond memories of my hometown, even though it was quite a poor place at the time. After a major employer in the area closed, a lot of people had to relocate for work, and many local businesses didn't survive. But the community spirit kept us going through the challenging times. Thanks to some recent investments, the main street is once again full of cafes, shops, and restaurants. And that's why lots of people choose to retire there.
Speaker 5.
I grew up in a rather average town, a nice enough centre with a few cafes, a number of decent primary schools, and fairly affordable property prices. Also, you never needed to worry about being unemployed, as a local factory was always looking to take people on. They still do to this day. In fact, that's the key reason why many people chose to live there. I decided to move away to go to university, but have no plans to move back there, now that I've graduated.
Speaker 6.
My hometown has everything you could wish for. You know, green spaces, some good schools, a variety of shops. I'm quite lucky that I can live with my parents, as the property prices are way above what an average person can afford. To be fair, though, unless you live here or are visiting family or friends, there's no real reason to visit. It's just one of many similar towns in this part of the country, with nothing of particular interest.
That is the end of exercise 3. In a moment, you will hear exercise 4. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Exercise 4. You will hear an interview with Sarah, the winner of the Young Makeup Artist competition. Listen to the interview and look at the questions. For each question, choose the correct answer, A, B, or C, and put a tick in the appropriate box. You will hear the interview twice.
Sarah, thank you for joining me today to talk about the Young Makeup Artist competition you recently won. You're only 17. When did your interest in makeup start?
Actually, I was never that bothered about makeup. My girlfriends would apply their mum's makeup in secret, but I preferred the natural look, just like my own mum. My cousin was determined to get me to go on a makeup course with her, and I kept saying no until she asked me to do it as her birthday gift. She left me no choice.
That's interesting. And within months of completing the course, you went on to enter a national makeup competition. Why?
I know, it sounds crazy. I'd really enjoyed picking up lots of useful makeup skills, and I wanted to continue learning, but I couldn't afford to keep paying other people to teach me. So my main motivation was to actually win the competition. The winner would get a considerable sum of money. I'm not a naturally competitive person, but I was really keen to succeed.
It must have taken some hard work to prepare.
It did, yes. I spent ages not getting enough sleep because I was watching online makeup tutorials late into the night. As you can imagine, some of them were more useful than others. Then one day I got in touch with an experienced makeup artist, and she offered to take me to a film set to help her, which was more worthwhile than all the other preparation work put together, including reading the latest beauty magazines.
So, tell us a bit about the competition. Was there a part that you found particularly challenging?
We started with a natural day look, which can be tricky, but as I had practiced a lot, I did well. Then we moved on to the evening look. I didn't apply too many colours, as it can ruin the overall effect. In the final task, the wedding makeup, my model had a very striking face, which really took a lot of skill and creativity to work with.
What about the other contestants? What were they like?
Not as competitive as I thought they would be. As this was my first ever competition, I was feeling quite nervous on the day, and I noticed that a few other people were too. But what I really didn't expect was how happy everyone was to support one another. You know, as much as the competition rules permitted.
So, what makeup advice can you give to our listeners?
There's one thing I will say over and over. Get a professional's opinion about the colours that are right for your skin tone. There's nothing more important, in my opinion. I know people are often tempted to buy some expensive makeup products, but to be honest, you're mostly just paying for the marketing rather than quality. And try to invest in excellent brushes. If you look after them, they will last you a lifetime.
And would you encourage our listeners to enter the competition?
Well, it was a great experience for me, even though I wasn't really that into makeup to start with. But the months leading to the competition were hard work, so you have to be confident the preparation time is not going to affect your schoolwork. I benefited greatly from the support of my friends, who were there for me every day.
So, what are your plans for the next few years?
I've realised that the makeup world offers some great professional opportunities, and I'm hoping to run my own company eventually. But my dad advised me to go to university first, and I think he's right, so I've just submitted my application. After the last few months, I think I've had enough of competitions.
Thank you, Sarah.
Now you will hear the interview again.
Sarah, thank you for joining me today to talk about the Young Makeup Artist competition you recently won. You're only 17. When did your interest in makeup start?
Actually, I was never that bothered about makeup. My girlfriends would apply their mum's makeup in secret, but I preferred the natural look, just like my own mum. My cousin was determined to get me to go on a makeup course with her, and I kept saying no until she asked me to do it as her birthday gift. She left me no choice.
That's interesting. And within months of completing the course, you went on to enter a national makeup competition. Why?
I know, it sounds crazy. I'd really enjoyed picking up lots of useful makeup skills, and I wanted to continue learning, but I couldn't afford to keep paying other people to teach me. So my main motivation was to actually win the competition. The winner would get a considerable sum of money. I'm not a naturally competitive person, but I was really keen to succeed.
It must have taken some hard work to prepare.
It did, yes. I spent ages not getting enough sleep because I was watching online makeup tutorials late into the night. As you can imagine, some of them were more useful than others. Then one day I got in touch with an experienced makeup artist, and she offered to take me to a film set to help her, which was more worthwhile than all the other preparation work put together, including reading the latest beauty magazines.
So, tell us a bit about the competition. Was there a part that you found particularly challenging?
We started with a natural day look, which can be tricky, but as I had practiced a lot, I did well. Then we moved on to the evening look. I didn't apply too many colours, as it can ruin the overall effect. In the final task, the wedding makeup, my model had a very striking face, which really took a lot of skill and creativity to work with.
What about the other contestants? What were they like?
Not as competitive as I thought they would be. As this was my first ever competition, I was feeling quite nervous on the day, and I noticed that a few other people were too. But what I really didn't expect was how happy everyone was to support one another. You know, as much as the competition rules permitted.
So, what makeup advice can you give to our listeners?
There's one thing I will say over and over. Get a professional's opinion about the colours that are right for your skin tone. There's nothing more important, in my opinion. I know people are often tempted to buy some expensive makeup products, but to be honest, you're mostly just paying for the marketing rather than quality. And try to invest in excellent brushes. If you look after them, they will last you a lifetime.
And would you encourage our listeners to enter the competition?
Well, it was a great experience for me, even though I wasn't really that into makeup to start with. But the months leading to the competition were hard work, so you have to be confident the preparation time is not going to affect your schoolwork. I benefited greatly from the support of my friends, who were there for me every day.
So, what are your plans for the next few years?
I've realised that the makeup world offers some great professional opportunities, and I'm hoping to run my own company eventually. But my dad advised me to go to university first, and I think he's right, so I've just submitted my application. After the last few months, I think I've had enough of competitions.
Thank you, Sarah.
That is the end of the interview. In a moment, you will hear exercise 5. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Exercise 5. Part A. You will hear a biology teacher giving a talk about a type of tree called the dragon blood tree. Listen to the talk and complete the notes in Part A. Write one or two words only in each gap. You will hear the talk twice.
In today's lesson, I would like to talk to you about the dragon blood tree. This fascinating tree, which stays green all year round, can only be found on an island in the Arabian Sea, off the coast of Africa. Let me start by talking about the tree's unusual appearance. It can grow up to 12 metres tall, and the dense branches at the top grow mostly sideways, which many people think makes it look like an enormous mushroom. Personally, it reminds me of an umbrella that has been blown inside out by the wind. This unusual shape enables the tree to survive in conditions where other trees may struggle to grow. The large branches create shade, which reduces the loss of water from the ground into the atmosphere. It is for this reason that it's able to survive high up in mountains. The shape also helps the young trees grow underneath, which is why they often grow close to one another. Now, the tree's name comes from this sticky red substance called resin that the tree produces after a branch or the bark is cut. Because of this, the resin became known as dragon blood, and that is how the tree got its name. Ancient Greeks and Romans first used dragon blood as a dye and in medicines, and it has since been used in many different products, including glue. It is even added to toothpaste, which would never have occurred to me. The dragon blood tree tends to flower around February time, and the flowers, which are green and white, normally grow at the end of the tree branches. These flowers fully develop into berries after about 5 months. The berries gradually change from green to black and finally to orange when fully mature, and each berry only has up to 3 seeds. And finally, a few words about the conservation status. Although there are several factors putting the tree population at risk, such as animals feeding or people using the tree for firewood, nothing is considered to be as harmful as climate change. Other issues may be the increasing amount of development on the island, especially the road building, as well as the growing number of visitors. Before we look at some photos of this amazing tree, does anyone have any questions?
Now you will hear the talk again.
In today's lesson, I would like to talk to you about the dragon blood tree. This fascinating tree, which stays green all year round, can only be found on an island in the Arabian Sea, off the coast of Africa. Let me start by talking about the tree's unusual appearance. It can grow up to 12 metres tall, and the dense branches at the top grow mostly sideways, which many people think makes it look like an enormous mushroom. Personally, it reminds me of an umbrella that has been blown inside out by the wind. This unusual shape enables the tree to survive in conditions where other trees may struggle to grow. The large branches create shade, which reduces the loss of water from the ground into the atmosphere. It is for this reason that it's able to survive high up in mountains. The shape also helps the young trees grow underneath, which is why they often grow close to one another. Now, the tree's name comes from this sticky red substance called resin that the tree produces after a branch or the bark is cut. Because of this, the resin became known as dragon blood, and that is how the tree got its name. Ancient Greeks and Romans first used dragon blood as a dye and in medicines, and it has since been used in many different products, including glue. It is even added to toothpaste, which would never have occurred to me. The dragon blood tree tends to flower around February time, and the flowers, which are green and white, normally grow at the end of the tree branches. These flowers fully develop into berries after about 5 months. The berries gradually change from green to black and finally to orange when fully mature, and each berry only has up to 3 seeds. And finally, a few words about the conservation status. Although there are several factors putting the tree population at risk, such as animals feeding or people using the tree for firewood, nothing is considered to be as harmful as climate change. Other issues may be the increasing amount of development on the island, especially the road building, as well as the growing number of visitors. Before we look at some photos of this amazing tree, does anyone have any questions?
Part B. Now listen to a conversation between two students about an international environmental charity called World Land Trust and complete the sentences in Part B. Write one or two words only in each gap. You will hear the conversation twice.
That tree the professor was talking about sounds interesting.
What a shame it's in danger of disappearing. It'd be great to do something to help.
Well, have you heard of World Land Trust?
No. What is it?
It's an international environmental charity protecting threatened plants and animals. They work together with a global network of partner organisations. Together they establish nature reserves. That's their top priority. The work they do is invaluable in protecting wildlife. They've also planted over 2 million trees worldwide.
Sounds great. Can we get involved somehow?
Yes, there's lots of opportunities to support their work. We could promote what they do on our social media by creating and posting a video clip.
That's a great idea, if we had the time. How about a donation via their website? Can we do that?
That sounds more straightforward. It'll help them cover the cost of planting and looking after young trees until these can survive on their own.
Yeah, that's simple enough, definitely. Having said that, I'd quite like to plant some trees myself.
I don't think they're doing any tree planting in our local area now, but we could do something else. I know that they've organised an interesting exhibition for the end of this month. It's about wildlife around the world, and they don't charge students entry fees. Fancy coming with me? There's also a talk, but I'm busy then.
Sure, sounds good. I'm just looking up some more stuff about the charity on my phone. They seem to be doing a lot of other things to make young people more aware of all the environmental problems.
Yeah, my little sister is using worksheets that her teacher got from the charity's website, which are available to download for anyone and are much more up-to-date than the course books the students use in class.
I think it's great that they aim to reach people at such a young age, don't you?
Yeah, totally.
Oh, I've read about another interesting project the charity's working on. They purchase land located in between smaller forests to join them together by planting more new trees on that land. Then they employ members of the local community to act as rangers who protect the wildlife there.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Yeah. It looks like they really thought their strategies through. Impressive.
Now you will hear the conversation again.
That tree the professor was talking about sounds interesting.
What a shame it's in danger of disappearing. It'd be great to do something to help.
Well, have you heard of World Land Trust?
No. What is it?
It's an international environmental charity protecting threatened plants and animals. They work together with a global network of partner organisations. Together they establish nature reserves. That's their top priority. The work they do is invaluable in protecting wildlife. They've also planted over 2 million trees worldwide.
Sounds great. Can we get involved somehow?
Yes, there's lots of opportunities to support their work. We could promote what they do on our social media by creating and posting a video clip.
That's a great idea. If we had the time. How about a donation via their website? Can we do that?
That sounds more straightforward. It'll help them cover the cost of planting and looking after young trees until these can survive on their own.
Yeah, that's simple enough, definitely. Having said that, I'd quite like to plant some trees myself.
I don't think they're doing any tree planting in our local area now, but we could do something else. I know that they've organised an interesting exhibition for the end of this month. It's about wildlife around the world. And they don't charge students entry fees. Fancy coming with me? There's also a talk, but I'm busy then.
Sure, sounds good. I'm just looking up some more stuff about the charity on my phone. They seem to be doing a lot of other things to make young people more aware of all the environmental problems.
Yeah, my little sister is using worksheets that her teacher got from the charity's website, which are available to download for anyone, and are much more up-to-date than the course books the students use in class.
I think it's great that they aim to reach people at such a young age, don't you?
Yeah, totally.
Oh, I've read about another interesting project the charity's working on. They purchase land located in between smaller forests to join them together by planting more new trees on that land. Then they employ members of the local community to act as rangers who protect the wildlife there.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Yeah. It looks like they really thought their strategies through. Impressive.
That is the end of exercise 5 and of the exam. In a moment, your teacher will collect your papers. Please check that you have written your name, centre number and candidate number on the front of your question paper. Remember, you must not talk until all the papers have been collected. Teacher, please collect all the papers.